So, good morning. Last night, Jocko and I were watching a documentary on... I'm having a moment here. John Lewis, Congressman John Lewis. And I had intended to talk about Genjo Cohen this morning, and I thought to myself, it's the 4th of July. I should be talking about the 4th of July. So instead of the Genjo Cohen. So we're going to have a lecture this morning about the 4th of July. And this, of course, is the 4th today, Independence Day, the day that the adaption of the Declaration of Independence by the Continental Congress happened in 1776. This was a declaration primarily separating from the 13 British colonies that say that the United States or the British or the colonies, the 13 colonies, were no longer subject to the rule of the British King, George III. So as many of us know, the famous lines in this document, we hold that these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem more likely to affect their safety and happiness. So that's the rest of that opening paragraph. So, you know, every time we talk about this opening paragraph, we always seem to, we get caught immediately on that all men are created to be equal. Chances are good the founders probably meant something like all white men, all men who own property. But then again, some of the people who were involved in creating this document were concerned about all men in respect to people who were enslaved in this country, that they too be included in this document. And I think probably the fact that they came up with all men was probably considered a good compromise at the time that allowed some flexibility in the future. You know, Abigail Adams wrote to her husband in March of 1776. She said, as this document was being composed, she said, "Remember the ladies and be more generous and favorable to them than your ancestors. Do not put such unlimited power into the hands of the husbands. Remember, all men would be tyrants if they could. If particular care and attention is not paid to the ladies, we are determined to foment a revolution and will not hold ourselves bound by any laws in which we have no voice or representation." So even then, there was an awareness from the women in that group that all men did not include all women. Then, of course, much later, Abraham Lincoln said of the clause, he said, "All men are created equal." And then he said about this clause, "All men are created equal," he said, "Our republic robe is soiled and trailed in the dust. Let us repurify it. Let us readopt the Declaration of Independence, and with it the practices and policy which harmonize with it. If we do this, we shall not only have saved the Union, but we shall have saved it, as to make and keep it forever worth of the saving." So here, of course, was talking about the enslavement of African Americans in the United States. He was saying that all men must include these men as well. Of course, at that time, he was not including women, as far as we know. He was talking about men. So if we look at this document, obviously, from our perspective, opportunities were missed. But for its time, the Declaration of Independence was quite a radical document. And from the very beginning, we know that people were aware of its deficiencies as a document that addresses the right of all peoples in our population. In 1789, this had reached such a tipping point that they created the Bill of Rights. It was crafted, it had 12 amendments, which were intended to clarify and amend the Constitution. We've continued to engage in that activity. Now we have 27 amendments. Among them, we have the right for religious freedom, the totality of the Bill of Rights, right for religious freedom, freedom of speech, press, assembly, and petition, fair trials, the abolition of slavery, civil rights, and the right to vote for blacks and women. So I want to encourage you, as I'm giving this talk, to think about this from the perspective of our understanding of Buddhist teachings, because actually I think there are many parallels here, and that we could understand this document from the perspective of our teaching. You know, since the beginning of our nation, we have been pondering and fighting over the meaning of these documents. But it's interesting that somehow we all agree that the documents themselves are some kind of foundational platform upon which we stand as a nation. I find that very interesting, that we all are fighting and struggling over the meaning of these documents, but we're not talking about getting rid of the documents themselves. We argue about how we apply this document to all people, whether it's their sexual orientation, their color, sex, abilities or disabilities, a person's country of origin. Everybody, in all of their diversity in the United States, we look to these two documents and we keep doggedly trying, interpreting, fighting, amending, and following in a grudging or willingly way these guidelines. People from all over the world look to the United States and look to these documents and say, you are falling down. You are not following your very creeds that you have put forth. But they also look to the United States and say, yes, a country of freedom, despite all of its difficulties, still struggling to try to find out what that means. So I think that's pretty amazing that this document that was written hundreds of years ago is a testament to the founders' efforts, despite their flaws, despite the culture at the time, despite all the difficulties and the disagreements that were happening in their own time about the nature of how this document would be created. In a way, it's interesting because we use the word, you know, all men are created equal. Men is a word that can represent everybody. So in a way, while as a woman, I may feel like it doesn't exactly represent everybody, that I wish that it said all men and women or all people, there is still this way in which the fact that they just said all men in the midst of their own difficulties, cultural difficulties at the time, has allowed us to open that word up, to explore that word, to say, what does this mean? And that's true of a lot of what these documents say. So, you know, before I leave this topic of the documents themselves, we have also been inspired by an 1883 sonnet that was called The New Colossus. The New Colossus was written by a Jewish activist whose name was Emma Lazarus. And the poem that she wrote was in response to the Chinese Exclusion Act and to European colonialism. So I'd like to read this poem to you, and many of you may already know what this poem is. Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land, Here, at our sea-washed sunset gates, shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame. Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp. She cries with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my light beside the golden door. Such moving, incredible words that she wrote. And they, too, are a creed of our nation. They, too, have been the foundation of our nation. And also, we fight about these words all the time. We fight about what it means to allow people into our country who are refugees, who are undocumented, who sneak in, who sail in, who fly in, all the various ways that people come to our shores. So we fight about this. We should stop and think about the very fact that we can fight about this, that we can struggle over these issues. We can demonstrate, unlike a totalitarian state, we can keep coming back and yelling at each other and getting face to face, trying to struggle and work with these issues. And also that we have provisions and mechanisms for change within the structure of our country. And no matter how much we feel despair, which I know that probably all of us have at one time or another, despair about whether or not things will actually change. Things have changed. You know, even in most of our lifetimes, many of us, we saw the second wave of women's rights in this country. We saw a renewal of civil rights for African Americans in this country in the late 50s, early 60s, which John Lewis was very much involved in. He was one of the primary activists during that time. He was the president, leader of SNCC. SNCC stands for the... Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And he practiced nonviolence. You know, he was there at all of these lunch counter demonstrations. He was had things thrown at him. He was bloodied. He was beaten, and yet he continued to practice nonviolence throughout all of this. And he did this throughout his youth, and then finally he ended up running for Congress. So now he's a congressman. What an inspiration for us as practitioners to actually have the courage. You know, he said in the documentary, he said, I didn't want to get beaten. I didn't want to be hurt. I didn't want to feel pain. And yet, he also knew that he didn't want to participate in that violence. But he wanted to make change. So he stayed. He kept going back, leading, following, asking himself, what are my deepest vows, what are my deepest principles, and adhering to them. So in my lifetime, I've seen the resurgence of various of these movements. I've seen the beginning of gay rights, transgendered rights, all of the rights that are associated, LGBTQI+, QIA+, all of the initials, all of these various ways, Black Lives Matter, Native Americans. It is said Native Americans are our original sin. But ultimately, what matters is that everyone, all people are created equal, everyone should be able to pursue. Happiness. Everyone should be free from suffering as much as it is possible. We cannot, from a Buddhist point of view, we know we cannot be free from suffering because we are in a body, because we will experience physical pain. But that we could hope that we could be free from the suffering of hunger, the suffering of abuse, all of these various things. So our country is based on quite an amazing idea. And it's a very inspirational idea. And I think we carry that inspiration with all of us, again, in the midst of our struggles and fighting and carrying on about this, that, and the other thing, even violence that we engage in towards each other, that is based on this kind of deep desire that we have. And of course, every one of these movements that we think of, if you're depending on your politics, every one of these movements has a counter movement to it. Of course, if it didn't have a counter movement to it, we wouldn't be struggling trying to make something happen one way or the other. And of course, this is how we are as human beings, foolish human beings. So we have a long history in the United States of these struggles in the history of mankind. Mankind, womankind, personkind, beingkind. We have this history, fits and starts, seeming to go forward and then going backward. But I would say, as I look at this as a whole, giving this lecture today, looking at the United States, while it does seem sometimes not to be going much of anywhere, it actually does bend towards equality and justice and the alleviation of suffering. That never seems to be very far from our consciousness. So we have been diligently making this effort to change our country's way of looking at this, to change each other as individuals, and to change our government, to have our government more reflect its original premise. And that we continue to make this effort, standing together, even in our struggles, even as sometimes we don't understand each other. You know, we talk about, I say Black Rights Matter, but I don't know what it is to be African American in this country. I know what it is to be a woman in this country. I know what it is to be a lesbian in this country. So I know something about being in groups that are discriminated against, but I don't know completely what it is. I don't know what it is to be African American. I'm a white woman, and I'm a white woman who comes from, middle to upper middle class family, so I don't know what it is to grow up in poverty. I don't know all of these various ways, but I do know that I do not personally want to be involved in extending and continuing or being ignorant about the suffering of other people. And even in the midst of my mistakes, that is my deepest vow. I believe it's the deepest vow of everyone who's listening to this lecture. And so as much as we can give each other space to make mistakes, as much as we can educate each other about our various situations and cultivate this empathy, cultivate an empathy towards each other. From our Buddhist perspective, we understand that we are truly equal. This is our teaching, that we individually have a responsibility to find common ground and to support each other in all of the complex ways that confront us. And I realize they are complex. People didn't used to be worried about the environment, but now we do have a deep concern about the harm that we've caused to the environment. Social issues, of course, have always been present for us as human beings, as are our personal issues. So these are the things that we're fighting over, striving for, aching for. Each moment, we're striving to attain or highlight the same principles in Buddhism as we are talking about our founding fathers, our interconnection, which respects our diversity, our vow to end suffering. In our case, we say to practice the Bodhisattva way. So I would encourage us during this new wave of awakening to the struggle of ourselves and others, to this struggle to find equality, to this struggle to say no more. We do not want this violence in this struggle right now, in the problems that we have around the coronavirus and the difficulties that are arising. We know that during the coronavirus, people are suffering because of poverty, because of the color of their skin, because of social ills. They are dying in larger numbers than white people. About the issues around healthcare, but that we keep going on. We keep making the struggle with each other. This is like practice realization. Change will not continue to happen unless we make an effort for change. And it is that effort itself that is the manifestation of the wish and enactment of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for all beings. So, let us take John Lewis's non-violent resistance and our Buddhist practice as inspiration, and not forget the aspirations of our own hearts and the hearts of all beings. Not forget the desire of all people to find peace. So may we, with all beings, be free from greed, hate, and delusion on this 4th of July in the year of 2020. Thank you.